This old house once knew his children. This old house once knew his wife. This old house was home and comfort as they fought the storms of life.
We'll continue our series on housing issues and home finances during this edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us on this Tuesday, April 16th. I hope tax day yesterday was uneventful for you and that stress is over for another year. Coming up, we will welcome your personal finance questions and especially your questions about money issues involving your home, like buying or selling or refinancing or renovations, as we talk with financial planner Kevin McKinley about whether a reverse mortgage is right for you, whether it's worth it to get an appraisal to refinance. What do you do if you want to make an offer on a home, but you think the seller is asking way too much? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Kevin McKinley is with us as usual. Kevin McKinley, certified financial planner and managing member of McKinley Money LLC, joins us from our studios in Eau Claire. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Joy.
So, did you, you made it through tax day?
Yeah, is that, what is that? Is that coming up? Because it feels like...
It's next week, Kevin.
Is it? So, okay, good. I better get going on that because this always sneaks up on me and I can never remember. It's in April, I know that, but I can never remember the date.
Well, anyway, today we're going to continue this series on housing issues. We've been talking about home buying, home selling, borrowing. Today we have some news on changes being made to a unique type of mortgage. What changes are being made?
Well, it's the reverse mortgage, which both of the regular listeners to the show know that it's a chance for owners who are over the age of 62 to get a loan against the equity in their own primary home. They don't have to submit an application in the traditional sense. They do have to apply for it, but it's not a normal credit check. And technically, they never have to pay the loan back. It's only after they move or die or sell the home that the loan has to be paid back. And if it, what technically happens is it's usually sold. And if it's sold for more than what is owed on the reverse mortgage, there's actually proceeds, net proceeds that go either to the owners or to their estate or heirs or whomever. But if it's sold for less than what is owed on the mortgage, meaning it's upside down, the owner still doesn't owe the difference between the proceeds and what was owed on the mortgage.
Yeah, I know we've talked about this from time to time. What are the changes that are being made or will happen?
What happened is several people who took these out during the housing boom ran through the money, and part of the responsibility of a reverse mortgage holder, if you will, is that they have to maintain the property and they have to pay the property taxes and insurance. Well, they did not have any money left over for it, and so the FHA, which insured a lot of these reverse mortgage, took a big loss on this. And so what happened is they've suspended use of the FHA-insured fixed-rate reverse mortgage, and that was one of the most popular ones that people chose when they did decide to get a reverse mortgage. There's still a standard saver option, which has lower fees up front, but also has a lower net proceeds amount. So you're going to get less money out of that than you could out of the FHA one, and will still be able to get a larger amount if you choose to go with an adjustable rate one, or if you use one that's like kind of like a home equity line of credit that you can draw from at any time. And this is the kind of thing where a lot of people are considering these. Not a lot of people actually have either the guts or the dire circumstances that would cause them to go through and get a reverse mortgage. But there's a lesson here for just about, excuse me, all of us in terms of what is happening now versus what can happen later.
Ooh, such as what lesson?
Well, if you have been thinking about getting a mortgage and you're hesitant to do it because you say, well, I don't need the money right now and I can always get one down the road, or if you're thinking about refinancing or getting a cash-out mortgage, which we often endorse, you may want to do it now rather than later because circumstances, tighter lending standards, higher interest rates, another fall in the housing market, those could all cause you to not be able to get the mortgage in the future at the same very considerable terms that you can get it right now. Lenders might require you to get an adjustable rate mortgage only. They might only offer it for a shorter term. They might only give you a smaller amount versus the standard, say, 80% of loan-to-value equity that they're willing to give right now. And if I'm wrong and everything either stays the same or gets better, you can always refinance down the road. And if you take a mortgage out now and you don't need to get one, you can always pay it off if at some point you want to do that.
All right, lesson learned. What do you say to those, though, who are still interested in a reverse mortgage?
I would keep the option on the table. Keep in mind that when you take these out, there are very high fees that go in some part to the lender and some part to the agency. You don't have to pay those fees. They're often rolled into the reverse mortgage or they're subtracted out before you actually get your check from the mortgage. They're definitely not for everybody, but they're very good for some people. It's typically for older people who are physically able and interested and willing to live in their primary home, but don't have a lot of other investments to generate income to cover all of those costs. And those homeowners who don't have any interest in passing the home on to another generation or in keeping it after they're gone or move out. The good news is, in 20 or 30 years ago, when these first came out, there was a lot of abuse in the industry. And now there's a requirement that most reverse mortgage borrowers get counseling from a federally approved counselor before you can get a reverse mortgage. And so go to HUD.gov, HUD.gov, to find a counselor in your area. And we'll provide a direct link to that search function at our website, OnYourMoney.com, later on today.
Kevin McKinley is the managing member of McKinley Money LLC, a registered investment advisor with offices in Eau Claire and Madison. Kevin does not intend to provide personalized investment advice through this broadcast and does not represent that the securities or services discussed are suitable for every investor. Investors should consult with their financial advisors prior to making any investment decisions. That being said, if you have a question for Kevin, if you have a money matter on your mind, we have an open line for you at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. And it is time now for the On Your Money email bag. And Peggy says in an email, "My husband and I would like to refinance our home. We had been looking at a 15-year mortgage loan, but after listening to the program, I agree that a 30-year mortgage makes sense. We need to hit a certain value at appraisal in order to qualify for a refinance, and we are worried about that. We suspect that the appraisal will come in low. We really don't want to shell out $400 for an appraisal if there's not a good chance that we will qualify for a refi." So what do you have to say to Peggy, Kevin?
Well, I say, Peggy, you're lucky to get this question answered, because the best false praise you could come up with is that after listening to the program, she agrees that a 30-year makes more sense. It has to be way more obvious than just saying, okay, you might be right. But they're misguided, and they're misguided in the sense that they are deciding two factors over which they have little control. One is the appraisal, and the other is what the lender will say when that appraisal comes in. So people who are thinking about doing this, and I suggest you at least think about it and reject it rather than not think about it at all. Let the lender turn you down and let the lender say that the appraiser came in light rather than deciding it for yourself. Second of all, $400 is a very small price to pay. And I've seen a lot of situations where individuals have gone through what Peggy and her husband are going through. And in the matter of a couple months after they refinance, they've saved enough money on their mortgage to more than offset not just even the payment, but even the closing costs, title insurance, etc.
So what happens, though, if the appraisal does come in below the amount needed?
They've got a couple different options. The first one is to work with the lender and say, well, this is our big situation. This is what we want to do. What can we do? Keep in mind, the lender only gets paid if he or she makes the loan. So generally, they're just as interested in making the loan to you as you are in getting the money. I've seen situations where people have had paid for vehicles that the lender has said, you know what we can do? We can lend you money against your vehicle to help build up the equity that you have in your home. We can give you a second mortgage to cover the difference, or you might just have to pay into it. And keep in mind, that's not good, but paying into a mortgage and so that you can refinance gets you a lower interest rate and more flexibility, and you are just paying down debt that you already owe.
Well, what if the lender says, tough noogies, we're not going to give you that refinance?
Well, that can be an issue, especially since if people haven't applied for a mortgage in a long time, this isn't just a handshake and a smile and I know them, they've lived, you know, they go to my church. They punch your numbers into a system, and if the system says yes, you generally get the mortgage, and if the system says no, you generally don't. But some lenders are a little more amenable than others, so you may want to shop around, look at a different bank or a credit union, or go to a mortgage broker, because a mortgage broker does have access to more different lenders and can find one maybe who suits your particular situation. And you might also want to shop around for a different appraiser and see if the first one has the consensus as the second one, and you might find a higher valuation, and that can help you get the ball rolling. And again, it's worth it to pay a few hundred dollars to try to get the best mortgage that you possibly can right now.
Well, we have another email in our On Your Money email bag. Another listener wants to know what to do. They are interested in a particular house, but think that the asking price of that house is too high. So they want to know, can they offer something that's well below what the seller wants, the listing price, without insulting the seller?
It's a great question, and you wouldn't think, if you hadn't gone through the process yourself, that it would be an issue, either the price is right or not. But people have a very emotional attachment to their homes often, and a lot of times they look at, you know, what this place sold for down the block, or what it's assessed for, or what they think it's worth because it has, you know, Brazilian cherry wood handles on the cabinets in the kitchen or whatever. A good way around this is to get a third opinion and to hire your own appraiser. Ask the lender if they can recommend an appraiser who they will use, or go to appraisers.org and you can find one in your area. Or if you're using a real estate agent, check with the agent and say, do you know any appraisers who are good and who we can use for this purpose?
All right, then what do you do?
Well, one of two things will happen. Either the appraisal will actually come in lower, closer to what you think the house is worth, and then you have the right and the ability to go to the seller and say, look, we really like this house, but we are going to get a mortgage for this house like most people will, and the bank is only going to finance an amount based on this lower appraisal. And if you point that out to the sellers, hopefully they'll say, all right, we understand maybe we're a little out of bounds with this asking price, and a little more reasonable one can be reached. But, you know, they may still say, we don't care what you say or the appraiser says, we still want what we want from this.
Yeah, and then again, the appraiser could agree with the sellers. Then what?
Absolutely, and that's okay. And if your credit's in order, that means that maybe you're wrong, that the house actually is worth more than this, and you can borrow more money if you can still afford it. You may be able to finance it at a higher amount, and if you have good credit, then you can still complete the transaction, but it's going to be more closer to what the sellers are asking.
So what's the harm, Kevin, to just place an offer that's well below the listing price if that's what you want to offer?
There's technically no harm in it. You end up wasting a lot of people's time, and it shows that you're not, you know, really serious about buying it, and especially if the price of the house is fairly reasonably valued. Most, you know, are a little high, but beauty's in the eye of the beholder, and so it's technically difficult to say exactly what a home is worth. And if the sellers get a bad taste in their mouth for your original offer, they're not going to be as easy to work with if you come in something that's a little closer to what they're asking.
Yeah, I know someone who was trying to sell his home for quite some time, finally got an offer. He might have been a little bit overpriced, but the offer was ridiculous. The offer was for $80,000 for a house that's probably, you know, worth three times that. Mm-hmm. And he was it was really insulted, and it was a big waste of time.
Yeah, right.
We are talking with Kevin McKinley. He is a certified financial planner, and we welcome your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Program update. You will, after 9 o'clock this morning in our next hour, hear more on the Boston Marathon bombing that occurred yesterday, a special edition of On Point. We will hear from guests about the very latest in this investigation. That's coming up after 9 o'clock. Kathleen Dunn will be with you after 10, talking with her guests, including the host of Weekend Edition Saturday, Scott Simon, talking about baseball star Jackie Robinson. That's after 10. This is On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley. Our number, if you have a question for Kevin, is 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Our first caller for Kevin is Lisa in Milwaukee. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. How are you? Thank you for taking my call. I'm wonderful. Kevin, my question is, my husband and I, about 2 years ago, purchased a home, and at the time, the interest rate was 4.75, and we're looking around and we're seeing interest rates in the upper threes, and we're wondering if that's enough of a difference to justify going through the refinance process.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me ask you this. Are you happy with your home? Do you plan on living there for the foreseeable future?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have anything coming up where you would need to borrow money otherwise, such as buying a car, paying for higher education expenses, or some other big-ticket item?
No.
Okay. Are you maxing out your pre-tax at-work retirement savings plans?
Yes.
Okay, good for you. I'd still say it's actually a good idea to refinance, just because, especially 1%, that actually can be a significant difference in the amount of payments. And what I would do, and this seems crazy, you probably paid quite a bit into this so that you have quite a bit of equity, right?
Not as much as we would have liked.
Of course. Not many people do. If you do have it, what I would do is get an 80% loan-to-value mortgage, as we talked about. Get a 30-year fixed rate. And a lot of people in your situation, Lisa, when they're tempted by these lower interest rates, they look at the 30-year and they say, well, that's 3.75 or whatever. And then they look at a 15-year and that's 3% or maybe 3.25%. And they say, well, gosh, this way we can get this paid off in 15 years. And I would rather have you actually get the 30-year mortgage and then make the payment that the 15-year would have required. And if you do that, you'll still pay the mortgage off in about 15 and a half years or so. But if for whatever reason something comes up down the road where you say, gosh, I'm so glad we have 30 years to pay this off because something else came up, and I can guarantee a few things in life other than something will come up. Interest rates will go up. You'll need the money for something else. You'll be so glad you have that 30-year in place so you can slow down your payments and drop them down to the level of the 30-year and use the money for the other more urgent need.
Wonderful.
Thank you, Lisa. Good luck to you. Let's go next to Alan in Salem. Hello, Alan. Alan, are you running to the phone?
Hi there. I'm here.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
I have a question about refinancing versus a modification. I bought my condo in 2008, and I have a 6.125% fixed 30-year mortgage. I've been looking at doing either a refinance or a modification to get my monthly payments down. And my credit union offered me both. I was able to do the home affordable refinance. I did the application, qualified for that. I actually have an appraisal scheduled for this week. What I'm trying to figure out is if it's best to do a refinance or a modification. They offered me a modification to stay at my existing term, which is 25 years. I don't have any equity in the place. I'm just trying to figure out what the best way to go about that is. I know the refinance actually resets the term to the full 30 years, and I didn't know if that's the way to go or not.
Does it lower the payment at all for you with the 30-year, Alan?
It does. It's about $137 a month, I think, is what
okay.
It saves me.
Are there more expenses involved in getting the refinance, like points or closing costs or anything?
I believe so. I think they charge origination fees and then the settlement services and all that.
Okay. I'd weigh out the two, and here's how I would do this. I'd lean towards the refi just because the lower payment. One thing people don't realize is time goes so quickly. And when you say, oh, gosh, it's going to take, you know, 4 years or whatever in this house before I make up the difference for these closing costs and title insurance and all this other stuff. 4 years goes by really quickly. That was 2009 was 4 years ago. And so I would always lean towards giving yourself the maximum amount of flexibility. And if you can't afford, even if you need to have the expenses rolled into the new refinance, I would still rather have you do it. Did you get a better interest rate on the 30-year than you would have kept on your original mortgage?
I think the modification, they were going to bring me down to, I think, 4.125, so it was a drop of a couple points. Mm-hmm. And the refinance, I think, would have been about the same. I think it would have gotten me to about the same interest rate.
Okay, that's still the 4.125-ish, somewhere
yeah,
around that range.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, I would. Thanks for saying that. I would definitely then go with the refi. I would go straight out 30 years for as much as they'll allow. Make sure you check the cost. If it's a credit union, usually their fees are to refinance are pretty reasonable. And so I don't think it's going to be that onerous. You can expect often to pay about somewhere between $2,000 to $4,000 in Wisconsin for all of these closing costs. Sometimes it's less if you have an established relationship or they're willing to waive some of these expenses, or you're paying a higher interest rate than you'd otherwise get. But usually $2,000 to $4,000 is about the reasonable amount. And let's say it is $2,000, and let's say you're going to save $150 per month. In about a year, you're going to make up the difference between your current mortgage and the new mortgage monthly payment, and in terms of what it's going to cost you to get that refinance. So, but after a year to 2 years, Alan, you'll be ahead of the game. So I would definitely, and again, you can always pay off the mortgage more quickly if you want and retire it in 25 years.
Mm-hmm. Now, the modification, it seemed like it was a little bit easier to do than the refinance. It was a $1,000 fee for the modification. And to me, that almost seemed like it was a little bit less of a headache, and it seemed like that would be the better way to go. It seemed like there was less upfront for me to get into a modification instead of a refinance.
That's probably true, and if that's your only option, I'd still take that. You're quite fortunate to have that, actually. But otherwise, I'd still lean towards the refi, even with the higher cost, and especially if you plan on staying in the place for the next 3 to 5 years.
Alan, thanks very much, and good luck deciding that one. Greg in Glen Ellyn, Illinois. Hi, Greg.
Good morning, Joy and Kevin. First, let me say thank you for a wonderful program. I wanted to make sure I greased the skids there.
Good job, Greg.
Good greasing.
No, but it is a great program. I look forward to it every week. My question is, I'm retired. I'm single. My income is Social Security and a military pension, $45,000. I'm very lucky. I've got about $350,000 in liquid assets, zero debt. Here's my issue. I want to move to Wisconsin. I'm not trying to get accolades. I'm just saying that's where I would like to move to. And my question is, am I going to have trouble without earned income qualifying for a mortgage?
Hmm. Yeah, first of all, accolades, I'm not sure we'll let you in, Greg. I mean, you just barely, you sound like a nice person, you sound financially stable, so you met the first criteria, but we're very strict on who we let into this state here. I hope you do move to Wisconsin, and I hope you can actually at least try to get a mortgage. One of the issues that you bring up is it's a salient point, because in terms of going after income to collect debts, Social Security, pension income, et cetera, often has protected status from creditors. And there's a good reason for that. They don't want to, you know, put retirees out on the street because that's their only sources of income. They don't want to take all of that income away. But what it also means is that then the lenders are more hesitant to give loans to people where that's their only source of income. My guess and my experience is if your credit is good and the house is reasonable, I mean, you're not trying to buy a, you know, $500,000 or $1 million place, that you will get the loan. I would definitely check with each lender. I'd start with a bank or credit union and then go to another one, and then also, again, go to a mortgage broker if you don't like the answers that you receive. But I think you will get that mortgage if you do decide to do it.
Hey, Greg, what
okay,
city...
Well, thank you.
Wait, before you go, Greg, what community are you thinking of moving to in Wisconsin?
Well, I've got some old buddies that we grew up in Illinois together, and he's got places. They've got places in Adams County around Friendship, Castle Rock, Lake.
Good. I think they have a good signal for Wisconsin Public Radio, so Good luck.
Oh, yeah. No, they do. I've been there. I listen to you. One more question, if I may. Would I be better off, or should I shop in the area I grew up in? I've got a long banking history in this neighborhood. Or would I have better luck dealing, or should I do both, with Wisconsin lenders?
I would go with the Wisconsin lenders if you're buying a Wisconsin property. And you're more likely to get the loan. You're more likely to get a good appraisal and understanding of the situation and neighborhood. It's not as big as it might have been 10 or 20 years ago. But I still would rather have you go with someone in Wisconsin preferably someone local. Try credit unions first. Usually you're going to get your best deal first, but oftentimes they can't do things that a bank might be able to.
I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, Certified Financial Planner. This is another special edition of On Your Money, focusing on issues related to housing and home financing, home buying, home selling. And we're welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let me say that again. You can send that email to onyourmoney@wpr.org.
Oh, the railroad comes through the middle of the house. The railroad comes through the middle of the house. The trains all come through the middle of the house since the company bought the land.
Anyway, that's a song, Kevin, that one of our listeners suggested that we play during this hour.
And it's actually, it was in the description from the realtor in one of the first houses I bought, too.
That the railroad goes through the middle
of the
house.
Yeah, they were just in full disclosure. They weren't saying it was a plus or a minus, but they thought you should know before you came to take a look at it.
Yeah, and the listener said that he thought it was relatable to this program since it's all about location, location, location when you buy. Thanks for that to our listener. Kurt in Menominee is with us next. Hi, Kurt.
Hello. I say you really enjoy the program, so does that entitle me to a correct answer now?
Yes.
No. And that's not because of your situation, Kurt. It's just because I guarantee no accuracy whatsoever.
All right. Point taken. Hey, a number of years ago, Wisconsin Public Radio had a guest on promoting the idea of round-robin bidding for selling a house. So there are a couple good points about it. I mean, the idea is that you would get the house appraised beforehand, mention everything that you know about the house, and then just show it on one weekend. And in order for this method to work, you had to have at least about 20 bidders to kind of set your market, and then after the weekend was done, you would it was all open, so everybody saw exactly what everybody else had bid, and you didn't have to up your bid, but you just bid what you thought it was worth.
Mm-hmm.
After the weekend, then the seller would contact the highest bidder and say, okay, here's your bid, the next highest bid is at Y, do you want to up your bid or leave it the same? And you just go through the list completely until nobody's moved their bids, and then you make the offer to the highest bidder. Have you heard of that method working in this area? Do you know anything about it?
Here's something I'll tell you, Kurt. I've listened to Wisconsin Public Radio more than any person, entity, outlet, than anything else, other than any other media source ever in my 47 years of life. And I've listened to things just, you know, terrible, spellbinding, compelling stories, fascinating anecdotes about it. I remember that broadcast more than just about anything else I've ever listened to on Wisconsin Public Radio. And it's because I had such a visceral reaction, because I remember the author saying, look, the whole key to this is you have to be willing to let the house go for whatever the best price is at the the deadline is. You can't say, well, that's not enough. Because if you hold out that option, much like if you have a reserve in any kind of auction, it will attract less people, and then therefore you won't get the highest price. And everyone said, well, what happens if they don't give what it's worth? And he said something that was very illustrative to me. I was very young at the time. He said, that's what the house is worth.
Right.
They said that highest bid right there, that's what it's worth. And I agree with that. There are a lot of auctions that are held for homes. Now, often they're held either due to a stress situation, meaning that, you know, it's bankruptcy. Sometimes it's for estate, and the heirs just want to get rid of the property as quickly as possible and get the best price for it and be done. But that if you say, I'm going to get the best price for this right now, that is a very good way to do it. But you really have to buy into the notion that whatever that number is at the top of the sheet or the bottom of the sheet, as the case may be, that's what the house is worth today. And therefore, you have to be willing to get rid of it if you want to follow this process. Now, the good thing about that right now is in many areas, Kurt, maybe not up here in northwest Wisconsin, but in the more metropolitan areas and the suburbs, there aren't a lot of houses for sale. And so it's probably a better time to do that than it was maybe 2 or 3 years ago. But again, you really have to be sold on this notion to say whatever that number is, even if it's a dollar, we're going to sell the house for that purpose. And it may be better off actually to have an auction for it where you actually have people having to come and bid for it, because they might get caught up in the bidding and bid a little bit more. But yeah, it's a very all chips into the center of the table attitude.
All right, Kurt. I hope. But was that correct? A correct answer, Kurt?
it was affirming. So yes, that's great. Thanks.
Yep. Thank you very much. Let's go to Robin in Madison now. Hi, Robin.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Well, Kevin, I followed your recommendations. We refinanced our house, got a 30-year fixed. We're sending a son to college in the fall. Took out as much equity as possible on the house, and now we have $70,000 sitting in a savings account. And my question to you, I've got a couple questions. One is, on our FAFSA form, do we have to, say that we have $70,000 sitting in a savings account? We do have another child that's will be going to college in a couple years. We also have some major house expenses. We're going to need to use some of that money for. All that money can't be earmarked for our kids' education. We're just going to need, money. We got a great interest rate, 3.375. My question is, what do we do? My son has gotten some scholarships and has a pretty good package to go to the school that he thinks he wants to go to, but do we just pay cash for our part of his college education? Do we just take it right out of that $70,000?
I would if you have it, and there aren't a whole lot of other choices now that you have gone through the refi. You can get, there are various loans you can get, but those are going to have a much higher interest rate and a much shorter payback period than what you've achieved with your mortgage. And when you talked about the FAFSA, I'm a FAFSA mandatory reporter, so I have to turn you in. I'm really sorry about that.
It's been claimed, trust me. So it looks like we can pay $50,000 a year. They said we could pay $34,000 a year towards our son's college education, which is a joke.
And you said, oh, that's good news. Tell me how.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. Where is that? I will do it if you just tell me where it's supposed to come from. Usually that figure comes way more about parental and household income than it is about parental assets. Generally, that refinanced amount does not, if 70,000 sitting in a checking account, typically only about maybe, probably 6% of that or so is included into the EFC, the expected family contribution. And this can vary, but 6% of $70,000 is, let's see if we really carry the seven, that's about $4,200. So that's not where it's coming from. It's usually more from income where the school is saying that.
Okay.
But I would get the subsidized loans that you can, and I would get the unsubsidized loans that you can, even though if you qualify for them, though you do have the money to pay for it, because that gives you a little bit more flexibility. And yes, you might pay a little bit of interest while your son is in school, but at the end, if you never needed to tap that money either for your own personal needs or for education, you can always use the proceeds from the mortgage if you want to pay off of those loans. But you can pay them off in a hurry, or you can just make the minimum payment every single month to keep the game going until things get a little bit better. So I would just put that cash in a, you know, savings account, check it out, keep it very safe. Don't be tempted to say, oh, you know, my crazy uncle's telling me to buy gold now because it's cheap. I can make a lot more money that way. Keep it very safe and do not risk it, but also keep it isolated just so that you've got it there when you need it.
Thank you very much, Robin, for the call, and good luck to you and your son. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Our house is a very, very, very fine house.
This is a housing edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine with certified financial planner Kevin McKinley. Kevin, also the managing member of McKinley Money LLC. And it's time for our Shop Around segment. Earth Day is just around the corner next Monday. So in keeping with our theme on housing, let's talk a little bit about shopping for an earth-friendly home, Kevin.
Well, it's you can do that if you want, but it's for more people, it's going to be more applicable if they actually invest in your own home and find some ways that you can not only save some money on future energy costs, but help save some energy and help the environment by using less energy or generating the energy more efficiently. And it's a really good investment in many cases, much more so than a lot of other paper investments out there. And we'd like to tell you how to do it, in starting with the easy ways and work into the more complex situations.
I like easy steps. Let's start with easy steps first.
Okay, these are some things you should probably be doing anyway. And one thing is, every month at least, you should change the filter in your furnace, in your HVAC, if you will. In part because if the filter's clogged, I'm sure most people haven't changed the filter. They can't remember the last time they did it, but you should change it at least in every quarter and preferably every month. Because what happens is, as the filter gets clogged up with dirt, the motor in the furnace and the blower has to work harder, which can tend to burn it out faster. It has to use up more energy, and it's less efficient, and then it ends up blowing more dirt and dust throughout your home. If you haven't replaced all of your light bulbs with CFLs yet, I know this is a very controversial subject with many people, but CFLs, I picked up a bunch the other day at the supermarket for about 50 cents each, and over the lifetimes of those bulbs, I'll probably save about $30 to $40 on my energy bill, depending on, you know, the situation in the bill, etc. And then finally, we're big fans of programmable thermostats. They typically cost about $30 to $40. And by manually adjusting your thermostat, yes, it seems more comfortable, but you're wasting a lot of energy that way than if you were using a programmable one. You typically get the payback within a couple months on a basic programmable one. But we bought the bullet here at On Your Money Labs and went out and bought the Nest thermostat. It's a beautiful one. It looks like Apple made it. Apple didn't, but you can integrate it with your iPhone or your iPad to control the thermostat. It's about $180 to $250 bucks, but it's almost a piece of art the way that it works so well and it looks so beautiful and it's very easy to use. You can go to nest.com to get more information on that particular thermostat.
Wait, so I can use my smartphone and program my turn down the heat at my house?
That's right. Someone said, they said, do you actually use your iPhone to turn down the heat at your house? And I said, no, but I can.
So what if we're looking to spend even more time and money?
Well, you might want to look on into the kitchen and the laundry and check your appliances. Right now, there are several programs for Wisconsin residents where you can not only get the old refrigerator or oven or washer or dryer picked up, but you can also get a $50 rebate on it as well. And then go into your furnace and your air conditioner. Usually those should be replaced for sure every 20 years, but 10 to 15 is typically a better time frame, in part because they become so much more efficient that you will make your money back very quickly after you replace it. There are several residential rewards program and rebates that can save you hundreds of dollars over what you would otherwise have to pay if you weren't aware of these programs.
Uh-oh, my air conditioner is at least 20 years old. Okay. What about some really big energy and money-saving home improvements?
Yeah, do you still have the ice truck? Do they drop off the big block of ice? And is that what
Yeah, I do. Actually, I did buy a furnace filter when I was on staycation last week, but I didn't put it in the furnace. So I have to
People wonder what the glamorous life we lead when we're not on the air. That about sums it up right there.
Right, we go on staycations and buy furnace filters.
Buy furnace filters, right.
Yeah.
You want to start looking at renewable energy. Start with a home audit. Usually costs little to nothing. They can not only tell you where you're wasting energy and money, but also some of the things that you can do, the really big projects that could save you a lot of money, like geothermal heat pumps, solar water heating and electric. And there is a ton of rebates and tax credits out there right now for people who are willing to undertake these things. And again, it typically ends up being just about a wash once you spend the money, but you get the comfort of knowing that you are wasting a lot less energy than what you otherwise would be.
And happy Earth Day to us. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, and this is On Your Money. If you have a question for Kevin, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. And back to the phones we go. Mike in Wisconsin Rapids is with us now. Hello, Mike.
Hello, good morning. My question is, I have a business line of credit for $225,000 that I am paying 5.25% interest on. And I use my house, which is appraised at $450,000, and the house is completely paid for. I use that as collateral for the line of credit. Now, my banker said that I might want to consider getting a home loan and getting a home loan again at 3.78% interest and use that as a line of credit rather than how I am doing it. What are your thoughts on that?
That's not necessarily a bad idea, especially when, and this is common for many small business owners, when you do go to borrow money for your business, often the lender does ask you to put some other asset up as collateral and won't accept even just a personal guarantee, but says we want your home in case you can't repay this loan. And it's an unfortunate circumstance, but you understand in many cases why they need to do that. If you said to me, either way, if things don't go well, I'm going to lose my home. If I take any of these loans out, then I would say, yes, you might as well go with the lower interest rate option. My guess is you probably have a little bit more protection if you use just the business loan than if you are also tapping the home. It's not a lot, but there's probably a thin wall between the bank and your home that maybe isn't there with the small business loan. And if it's a home equity line of credit, that's a different story because you're talking about adjustable interest rates and they can go up. All other things being equal, if things are going well, I am okay with you using that, especially if you can deduct the interest. If you're in a situation where you can deduct the interest on your home mortgage, it's possible to do it, but not every circumstance allows people to deduct it. Whereas, obviously, if you use just a business loan and have that interest, it'll obviously be a business expense and be more likely to be deductible. So if you're comfortable with your business and you would, it's a six of one, half dozen of the other, you're going to put the home, I don't want to say jeopardize it, but you're going to put it up as collateral either way, I'd go with the lower interest rate option, assuming you can deduct that on your personal tax return.
Hope that works for you, Mike. Gerard in Milwaukee sent this email. Your advice has been very helpful in the past and is a good reason I tune in every Tuesday. Thank you, Gerard. Mm-hmm. Question, you have mentioned a mortgage broker versus a bank. How can I find a reputable mortgage broker?
That's a good question, and I'm glad he said that he does tune in every Tuesday. No better compliment is paid to us when they say, Kevin, I love your show. I listen to you and Kathleen Dunn every Friday morning.
Yeah, I know.
I say, well, geez, good. I'm not sure
during
who that
the week
is.
In review.
That's right. Yeah. And it's going to be a little bit more difficult to find a mortgage broker now, but the good news is it's going to be easier to find a more reputable one because there were a lot of changes and rules added to how mortgage brokers could do business as of the first of the year. And so the ones that are remaining are actually probably a little more up and up than the ones who aren't around and couldn't survive based on the new rules. One thing I would recommend is you do talk to either a CPA, an attorney with real estate experience and a background, or go to a real estate agent and say, hey, I'm thinking about doing a refinancing. Do you have a mortgage broker who's easy to deal with, whom I can trust? And usually if it's someone who's been there business a long time, I would go to that person even if you don't get that kind of referral, because you don't have to take it. And they'll typically give you several different loan options from several different lenders that they can tailor to your circumstance, whereas a lot of other lenders at a bank or credit union are more restricted to just offering their particular terms for better or for worse.
Speaking of Kathleen Dunn, we will hear from Kathleen after 10 this morning. She will be talking with Scott Simon, NPR's Scott Simon, about Jackie Robinson and the integration of baseball. That's coming up after 10. But coming up next after 9 o'clock, a special edition of On Point with Tom Ashbrook from Boston. We'll have the very latest on the Boston Marathon bombings coming up after 9 o'clock. This is On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, and our next caller is Terry in Door County. Hi, Terry.
Hi, thank you. I'm calling to ask for some advice. We made an offer on a home. I own a home currently up here, and made an offer and found out that the house was in a short sale situation. So the contingency of selling my home was not acceptable. So the mortgage broker recommended taking all the equity of my house that I currently own, putting that down into this other one, and carrying both mortgages till I could sell mine. And I'm very uncomfortable with that because I can't do that for very long. And I'm just looking for a recommendation on the best, quickest way to sell your home without losing a whole lot of equity.
Right. Best possible price as soon as possible. Yeah, that's a tough situation. The auction is kind of a default one because you are going to sell it quickly. The question is what the price? The other one is, do you have it listed through an agent, a real estate agent or a realtor?
We will be doing that. That was one question. Is that the best route and just pricing it low and ready to go, or is there another
Yeah, I'd rather have you do that rather than try to hold out hope for, you know, an extra $5,000 or $10,000 or something. Is price it, you know, ask the realtor what kind of price do you think will get this thing out the door. And again, they're only using their educated guess. They don't know for sure. And I would also make it clear that, you know, you must sell this quickly, so you might bring in some other people. And again, it's a good problem to have. You have something to sell. But, and especially with this extremely long dark winter we're having, the actual buying and selling season is going to be extremely short this year. And so it's going to put the pressure on home sellers to try to get the thing out the door as quickly as possible, because once Labor Day comes, the market usually dries up. So yeah, I just put it in there. I'd probably list it a little bit lower than, you know, $5,000 lower than less. Hope that brings some people out. And then once you start getting the offers, you know, make it clear that they can't have any contingency offers as well, too, because that'll just complicate the situation. But yeah, get them in and tell them, you know, you're ready to sell, and you might bring in some other people who otherwise, you know, wouldn't want to monkey around going back and forth.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Terry. I think we have time for one more if we make it a little brief. Hope in Harvard. Hi, Hope, you're on the air.
Hi. You know, with this downturn in the economy that we didn't expect, we're just barely holding on. And we are due to retire in 3 years, but the mortgage doesn't come due until 6 years. And then we also have a small home equity loan. I mean, what do you do?
Hmm.
You mean in terms of, should you pay the mortgage off more quickly, or?
Well, they've laid people off. They've cut back the hours. I mean, should he try to ask his employer to take side jobs or stay on another 3 years? Because the mortgage isn't paid off until he's 68.
Sure. Yeah, I wouldn't pay it off any sooner than you have to. Have you looked at trying to refinance at all?
No, because it's on a 15-year loan, and it's the interest is very low, and the amount we have to pay is very low. It's not enough to even deduct.
Well, that's a good problem to have. But I would actually, if you are struggling and trying to figure out what to do with that, you may want to talk with the lender and just say, if we were to refinance, would that make our situation a little better? You can often lower your payment quite significantly by refinancing to a longer mortgage. And then if you get in a situation where you are healthier financially down the road, you can always pay it off at the same schedule that you otherwise would have. And typically, you know, the interest rate is probably very low on it, but they're not very much more expensive right now for a 30-year. So that could be a good option, a good way to maybe even get some cash out or to set up a home equity line of credit that you can draw from either if you need the money or if there's an emergency too.
Good luck, Hope. Thanks for calling. What's the website of the week, Kevin?
Well, we talked all about these tax credits, rebates, all these special programs, and for Wisconsin residents anyway, focusonenergy.com is the place to go to find out all the different ways that you can save money on saving energy and helping to save the environment. Focusonenergy.com, and we'll have a link up to that website at our website, onyourmoney.com, later on today.
All right, sounds good. And we have time for four more words before we go.
Spend less, have more.
Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money, LLC. He'll be back next week at this time for another edition of On Your Money. Thanks to Bill Martins, to Rob Ferret, to Cynthia Schuster, and to Amanda Magnus, who are producing the program this week. And thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.